Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
But I want to start by shouting out an H-Town clone this morning, because this particular H-Town clone has had a pretty huge week. In fact, this H-Town clone actually has had a pretty huge year. And he also happens to have a pretty huge job, because this H-Town clone just so happens to run the Houston Texans. But to be clear, I am not high on Nick Caserio's offseason, because the dude is a golden ticket holding, Jeff in Richmond loving, card carrying clone. I appreciate that he's all those things. I love that he's all those things. But that's not why I think he's having a huge week and a huge offseason. I think that he's having a huge week and a huge offseason because he's having a huge week and a huge offseason. And I know that I'm not alone in that take, but I will admit, the internet was a little divided by the latest news out of Houston yesterday, which was the announcement of a pretty shocking wrinkle in the Stephon Diggs trade. At Adam Schefter on the X posted, quote, added incentive for Stephon Diggs. As part of the Buffalo-Houston trade, the Texans wiped out the final 3 years of Diggs' contract, giving him the ability to become a free agent after this season, league sources tell ESPN. The Texans also took the $3.5 million guaranteed to Diggs next season and moved it up to this season, giving him a raise and assuring him of $22.52 million in guaranteed money in 2024. I mean, damn. That's wild, right? That is a big swing and a bit of a gamble. That's wild. So wild that at first it doesn't seem like it computes. For instance, Houston dealt a second round pick for a dude with 4 years left on his contract, only to wipe out the final 3 years of that contract and pay him more this season than they had to pay him. Like, huh? But let me help you out in figuring out what's happening right here and why I actually love the move. The Texans are all bleeping in. For real, all in. AKA the total opposite of Jarrah's version of all in.
We'll be all in. I would anticipate we'll be all in.
As out there as the arrangement with Diggs might seem, I love it. What the Texans are doing is trying to maximize next season. Next season, in any way they can. Not the next two or three seasons, not this window. Their window is right bleeping now. They're trying to maximize next season. And that includes incentivizing Diggs to ball the hell out. Look at it that way, and to me, it's a win-win. Because if Diggs does ball the hell out and makes them regret wiping those years off, Houston's going to be totally fine with that. They'll be thrilled with that because that's exactly what they want to happen. They want to get the very best of this guy right now. And if smack-talking Buffalo fan is right, and Diggs is in decline, or he's a malcontent, or both, then those final 3 years would have been dead weight. And then Houston's covered in that regard, too. So it's an enormous swing to me. It's an aggressive swing to me. It's a message of, we're in it to win it right this freaking second. And sure, there's some risk. But then again, no risk, no reward. And in this case, to me, there's some risk with the possibility of a huge reward. In other words, another really smart, big swing for the smartest and best dude in the room, Nick Caserio.
Great job to you, Alan.
Great job to you, Alan. The main thing is, the Texans are not worried about 2 or 3 or 4 years down the road right now. They're worried about right now, right now. The main thing is the main thing. And the main thing is lifting a Lombardi next February in New Orleans. They're not looking to take part. They're looking to take over. They are focused on maximizing their young star quarterback on his rookie contract. And that means they're about pouring everything possible into an all-in approach. They're not looking at that rookie deal, 4 years, 5 years. They're looking at a guy who had an amazing rookie year, and they know they're good enough to win it all in his second year. So they're going all in. If it sounds like I'm hyped on it, I am. I love it. It's so aggressive. Not going to lie. I love it, and I love also that it dunks all over Jarrah. Clone Caserio posterized Jarrah this week. Even worse than the Dallas mayor did. Although the Dallas mayor trying to recruit the Chiefs to Big D was pretty hilarious too. I mean, of course the Dallas mayor wants a real winner in town. Of course the Dallas mayor wants a team in town that doesn't just bump their geriatric gums about winning, but actually does win something. I mean, it really has been an amazing few months for Jarrah and them Cowboys. Curb stomped as home favorites in the playoffs, then promising everybody that are, quote, all in on next season, then doing absolutely nothing to deliver on that promise, while the other team across the state, the redheaded stepchild, allegedly, completely shows them up. You know what Jarrah's idea of all in is? Jarrah's idea of all in is ignoring Derrick Henry and re-signing Rico Dowdle. No offense to Rico Dowdle. But by the way, exactly what is a Rico Dowdle?
Your definition of what is all in and mine might not be the same thing. So I'm all into this year.
Yeah, no doubt, Jarrah. Your definition and Nick Caserio's definition are really different.
So I'm all into this year.
You see, Nick's idea of all-in is trading for Stephon Diggs and boosting his motivation in the process and trading for Joe Mixon and signing Danielle Hunter and signing Danico Autry and signing Azeez Al-Shaair. He did all that. That's his idea of being all-in, adding impact starters to an already very talented team that just won a playoff game. In fact, according to CBS Sports, Nick Caserio is the first GM in NFL history to add a player coming off a 100-plus catch season, Diggs, obviously, a player coming off a 1,000-plus yard rushing season, Mixon, obviously, and a player coming off a 10-plus sack season. And he actually added two of them because both Hunter and Autry had more than 10 sacks last season. Yo, geriatric, you taking notes, Pops?
So I'm all into this year.
So no, I'm not worried that Houston sent a 2025 second-round draft pick for possibly only 1 year of Stephon Diggs. Aggressive as hell. Smart as hell. Especially since they've set Diggs up to go crazy in that 1 year. And if the bottom fell out and doesn't work, they're still already really deep at that position. There's way too much good in this situation to worry that a second-round pick in next year's draft somehow ruins it. Clone Caserio is taking a huge swing on the here and the now, and I could not be more about it. Can you tell? As for you, Mafia, I'm a lot less high on where things stand for you right now. In fact, it looks a lot like your window is closing just as the Texans' window is flying wide-ass open. However, at least your GM came out this week and he said the right things. Mafia, you let me know. You let me know if Brandon Bean makes you feel any better when he says this.
Anytime you make a move like this, you're trying to win. And sometimes people may not see that, you know, this is by no means the Bills giving up or trying to take a step back or anything like that. Everything we do, we're trying to win, and we're going to continue to do that. It's, you know, it's April the 3rd or 4th, whatever it is, and we'll continue to work on this roster and make sure we're ready to play come September.
So the funny thing about dealing your number one wide receiver, generally that does not come across as, quote, trying to win. Trading your star receiver, who made the Pro Bowl in all four seasons with your team, and who made your star quarterback look pretty good seems like the opposite of trying to win. There's a pretty good reason why people are having a hard time seeing that as trying to win. And here's the thing. Bean would not say whether or not Diggs asked for a trade or not. I don't know if he did. Just as I don't know if they thought that, you know what, the guy's just no longer worth the trouble. That his productivity no longer exceeds or overrides the drama. I have no idea how it all went down. Again, I don't know if the player asked for the trade or if the team decided, you know what, he's just no longer worth it. But Mafia, even if Diggs is not what he used to be, he's still dangerous. And you're not better today than you were earlier in the week when you still had him, even with the drama. However, Bean is right about one thing. There is still time to address this and maybe fix this. There is still time to bring in another big-time target for Josh Allen.
Josh Allen.
Thank you, James. Not easy, but there's still time. I know they would love it if Josh Allen could just throw it to Josh Allen. I'm sure Buffalo would love it if they had a field full of Josh Allens. 22 Josh Allens.
Josh Allen.
And a Josh Allen to punt.
Josh Allen.
And a Josh Allen to kick. Nothing but Josh Allens.
Josh Allen, Jim.
As you can tell, Big Head wants nothing more than to keep smashing the Josh Allen button for the rest of the program. My point is this. Josh Allen's awesome. He can't do it alone. But at least the Bills have... Go ahead, James. Josh Allen.
Josh Allen, Jim.
So, Mafia, you can at least hold on to that hope. The Texans, on the other hand, have way more reasons for optimism right now. And Nick Caserio is absolutely one of them. That clone is right near the top of the list of reasons to love the Texans. And not just because he's a clone, but because he's smart as hell. He's disciplined as hell. He's all in on bettering his franchise and himself. And right now, there is not an executive in that league who is doing a better job than Nick Caserio. H-Town, you're lucky as hell to have this guy. Nick Caserio is the one dude who left the Patriots and is absolutely killing it. And you know what? Nick would be the first one to tell you that that was not always the case. Nick will own that. Nick knows he had tough years, a couple of tough years with the Texans. But... He stayed the course. He planned his work. He worked his plan. Credit to the franchise for not giving up on him. And now you have straight up, in Houston, a legitimate Super Bowl contender right now. All right, we are joined right now by a former consensus All-American at Kentucky. He was the SEC Player of the Year in 1993. He led the Wildcats to the Final Four that year. He was taken number 4 overall in the 1993 NBA draft by the Mavericks. He played a dozen years in the NBA for the Mavs, the Heat, the Hornets. He was an NBA All-Star in 2003. He averaged 19 points per game for his career. Today, he appears courtesy of the Box Out Colon Cancer Campaign, raising awareness for colorectal cancer. I'm talking about Jamal Mashburn. Jamal, my man, it is always great to get caught up with you. How you doing, Jamal?
I'm doing well, Jim. Always good to connect with you as well.
I appreciate that so much. Great to have you. So with the Final Four, Jamal, up tomorrow in Glendale, Arizona, I'm curious, what kind of memories do you have on your trip to the Final Four with Kentucky when you took on Michigan and the Fab Five in a tremendous game that went to OT?
Yeah, well, first memory is that I know I lost that game. You know, that's the first thing is that I lost to the Fab Five. But it was really like a relaunch, I would say, back to for Kentucky basketball to get back on the map. The year before, we had lost to Duke, and the people consider that the greatest college basketball game ever played when Christian Laettner hit that shot. But, you know, the Final Four was something special in New Orleans at that time. Wound up playing there my pro career, so there's a lot of memories there. But I do remember the activity around the Final Four, all the fanfare, the media availability, the open practice for the fans to come see. So a lot for the kids to do and a lot for the kids to experience, but it was one of my greater moments in NCAA basketball.
Jamal Mashburn is joining us. So, of course, Jamal, you played for Rick Pitino at Kentucky. I'm curious, what was it like to play for him back then? And then what do you make of the job he's doing at St. John's, even at age 71?
Well, at age 71, I can really say when I played for him at the University of Kentucky when I was 19 years old, he's a lot calmer now than he is today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, than he was when I played for him. So, but still a great teacher of the game. I think Coach Pitino is one of them coaches where he's a lifer for college basketball, and he knows the game, teaches the game. I think he was ahead of his time with the three-point shot back 20-something years ago. Even when I played, he implemented the three-point shot, which was now defining not only college basketball but professional basketball. So great teacher, a great motivator, and I think he's going to do great things with St. John's, but I think he's come at a particular time when you got the NIL and transfer portal, which wasn't available during my day, so it makes the job a little bit more difficult.
So, Jamal, how intense was he back in the day? And then is there a favorite Pitino story that you have that you can share on the air?
You know, the favorite Pitino story that I have is that, you know, Coach Pitino came into my living room and really was honest and forthright of what he wanted for a Kentucky basketball player to rebuild that program. So him getting me to University of Kentucky when back then when I was coming out of school in 1990, it was more about Big East basketball and also the ACC, and SEC basketball wasn't even thought about at that particular time. So, you know, that's what I remember, him recruiting me and then also living up to what he told me he was going to do. He was going to make me a professional basketball player and help me develop. And his intensity, I mean, it ran through the course of where, you know, he would have his assistant coaches up at 5 o'clock in the morning doing conditioning. So he practiced what he preached at that particular time, and he believed that everybody should be in shape, and that was throughout the whole organization.
Mm. Jamal Mashburn joining us. So, of course, your son, Jamal Jr., followed Rick's son, Richard Pitino, from Minnesota to New Mexico, where they reached the NCAA tournament this season. He was a two-time All-Mountain West selection. With Jamal entering the transfer portal last week, how excited are you to see his next move? And what's it been like to watch him ball and develop into the player he's become?
You know, it's and thanks for asking that, because I think a lot of times people, you know, look at a father and son, especially when a son is playing in a particular sport that their father has excelled at the professional ranks, and forget that, you know, we're also dads as well, you know, and, you know, we live and breathe all the accomplishments and also all the failures that go along with the journey as well. So, you know, it's been exciting for me to watch him develop not only as a basketball player, but as a human being and as a man as well, as a young man. You know, early part when he got recruited coming out of high school, I had to take the lead in the reins on asking the questions, organizing the process, and different things like that. But now that he entered in the transfer portal, you know, I've only had a few schools that reached out to me directly, and they've all reached out to him, and he's handled the process and really figured out what he actually wants from the next coach and the next program. So I'm proud of him for being able to make his own decisions and becoming the best player he can possibly be as he's tried to chase the dream to become a professional.
Yeah, Jamal, I was going to say, excuse me, you're one step ahead of me, because I was just going to say, and I'll take my shot here. I had John Calipari on the show a few weeks back, and Cal was pretty clear, as he has been, that the team's got to get older and that he's looking for some veteran leadership. I was about to say Jamal Jr., of course, is his own man, and he'll make up his own mind, I'm sure. But are you hoping that he winds up in Lexington?
Actually, for me, the way I've always looked at it is that, you know, we've had a bunch of college coaches, and I won't, probably a list of 30 that I won't mention because I'm not into, you know, name dropping or anything like that. But as you mentioned, he's a two-time Mountain West all-conference player. So he's had a lot of schools reaching out to him from, you know, all the Power Five to other conferences as well. I just want to see what's best for him, you know, at the end of the day. My mother, when I was getting recruited, she would say to me, what's the best situation for you? Because you're the one that actually has to live it, you know. And I don't typically live in the past, and especially for my son, because he's looking forward and looking at his future. So if Lexington is good for him and he makes that particular choice that he would want to go there, then so be it. But it won't be tied to what I accomplished or the university that I went to.
I like
want
that.
Him to make his own decision and make his own journey, because he's the one that has to walk that walk.
It's such a great answer, Jamal. I'm sorry to jump in again. It's such a great answer. I keep saying that about our kids as well. They have to have their own journey. They have to have their own journey. They have to walk in their own path and their own journey. You know, I could argue that given the business and investment portfolio you have generated since you stopped playing the game, that you've had as much success off the floor as you had on it, which is really saying something. How does competing in business compare to competing as a professional athlete or a college athlete?
To me, it's the same. It's the same. I mean, you know, you got people in the business world that's competitive, but it's just not displayed on, you know, on highlights or wins and losses or different things like that. The wins and losses are different, you know, at the end of the day, and you have responsibilities of people, employees that work for you to meet their expectation, and because they got put food on the table for their families. But the competitive nature is the same. I've always been driven by knowledge, data, essentially, and then where I'm at that particular time as a professional athlete, and I do the same in business. And the one thing that I've learned by participating in college and professional sports and high school sports is the importance of team and the importance of leadership and the importance of culture. And without those things, you can't move forward in the business world and be successful. There's not a one-man show out there.
Jamal Mashburn is joining us. Easy to see why you've had the kind of success you've had also off the floor. Jamal, I would say, safe to say, and I would include myself in this, everybody listening today either has battled cancer or known somebody close to them who has. You've teamed up with Exact Sciences and the Blue Hat Foundation for the Box Out Colon Cancer Campaign to raise colorectal cancer awareness. Why is this cause so personally significant to you?
Well, it's significant to me because my mother, Helen Mashburn, she dealt with colon cancer back in 2001, and that was when I made an all-star team. So on the court, I was doing tremendous and reaching goals and things that I envisioned, but off the court, my number one supporter and me being an only child was dealing with a disease that we had no idea that was going to come to what it came to. So that's one of the reasons, is to continue on her legacy, deliver the message, not only to have the conversation and be open about screening, because we probably would have made different decisions if we would have got screened earlier, if she would have got screened earlier. So, and she would probably have avoided some healthcare obstacles. But my mother was in remission for 18 years. She passed away in COVID from a heart issue at 78 years old. And I made it a mission of mine to continue her legacy, because she taught me all my core values and how to dream, how to execute, not only in the business world and the sports world, but just as a person and being a leader in the community. So I want to continue to share my platform and be an inspiration for people to go get screened at, you know, 45 years and older, but also continue the conversation and the dialogue that we don't have as men and as women around the table about our health. We talk about superficial things. We talk about money. We talk about sports. We talk about business. But we don't actually talk about our health to the degree that we should be talking about it.
Such a good point. Those things don't mean anything. I mean, nothing means anything. As we get older, we know this. Nothing means anything but your health, or as as much as your health. Health is tantamount. Tantamount is the most important thing. I'm curious, Jamal, before you go, and thanks for that message, when you look at that Kentucky program right now, the state of the program, and you look at John Calipari, do you have faith that he can right that ship, that he can do what it takes to get that thing turned around and back to where it needs to be?
You know, and it's a high expectation at the University of Kentucky. I mean, it's not about necessarily, you know, winning SEC championships or winning an SEC tournament. It's about being Final Fours and also sealing the deal by winning the championship. So, you know, I think Calipari is the Kentucky job has a lot of responsibility attached to it. And not only do you have to be an excellent coach, but you also have to deal with media. You have to deal with alumni. And in this day and age with, you know, social media, he probably has to deal with a lot more than in the past. And then also you add in there NIL and a transfer portal. It's thrown a lot of coaches who have been a part of college basketball for 20 or 30 years into an upheaval where they have to deal in a certain manner, you know, in a different manner. So it's a difficult task, but I think he is the right guy. I mean, in my opinion, who else do you go out there and get that can fill that role? That's the question that has to be asked as well, you know. And at this particular time, I think Calipari has the chops to do it. He may have to get older players, and that roster may look a little bit different. But, you know, if you're all about winning, you do what you have to do in order to win.
Jamal Mashburn joining us once again. Jamal, I always look forward to it. It's such an insightful conversation, man. You are one of one. It is so good to get caught up. And I appreciate you finding value and still touching base and coming on the program. That was absolutely awesome, Jamal. I appreciate you.
Jim, you've always been one of my favorites. I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
So good to have you, dude. So impressed with you, Jamal Mashburn. That, I mean, think about that, Clone. Just step back for 1 minute. Find me a more impressive conversation than that. Jamal Mashburn, I did not have the time to lay out exactly what he's accomplished as a business person since playing the game. He has had an amazing, amazing second career as a business person. And he was being extremely modest about what he's accomplished, what he's built, his portfolio, his assets, what he owns, who he employs. So I've got a quick question for you. Are you looking for ultimate comfort and pain relief? Let's compare G-Defy shoes to other shoe brands that promise comfort and support and pain relief. Typical shoe brands rely on EVA soles for cushioning, but G-Defy offers so much more. G-Defy goes above and beyond with VersoShock technology, providing superior shock absorption and energy return if you suffer from foot, knee, or back pain. G-Defy's advanced technology may help provide you with the relief you deserve. I can't even believe these shoes and the difference they make for me. G-Defy shoes also offer two free supportive orthotics to help improve your body's biomechanics, resulting in proper body alignment and ultimate comfort. Yes, they do all that. So whether you're an athlete, a busy parent, or just somebody who's always on the go, G-Defy shoes offers the versatility and the comfort that your feet crave and need. Say goodbye to discomfort. G-Defy is more than EVA soles. It could be your path to unparalleled comfort and pain relief. Visit G-Defy.com today. Experience ultimate comfort and pain relief at G-Defy.com. G-D-E-F-Y.com. Use the code JIM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. That's code JIM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. G-Defy shoes. They are incredible.
It's time. We're going into a big weekend. We have nearly made it to the Final Four, which is awesome. We have nearly made it through 4 days of the Big Head, James Kelly running the board, which is miraculous. The Head is in for Alvey this week, and somehow, some way, has managed to get the plane up and down Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We still have to get through today. However, that aside, it does beg the question, with the Head running the board, how would he and I execute the Big Head Bet segment going into the Final Four? Because not doing that was not a possibility. And while he has unlimited circumference with his cranium, he does have a limited bandwidth, generally speaking. So I asked the Head if he thought he could pull this off, and he said, and I quote, "Hell yes, it's the Final Four, let's do this." And I said exactly what I wanted to hear, Head. So hell yes, Head, let's do this. How you feeling?
Can you hear me, Mad Dog?
Oh, I can hear you, dude. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great, man. I'm ready to do this. Okay, ready for some Final Four basketball.
Quick question, though, first. How are you going to be able to share your particular insight and your picks while at the same time trying to wedge in your Poulter, Wendy Williams, and Rex Lee drops? I mean, you probably can't do that, right? And if you can't do that, are you going to be able to actually do the segment itself?
Funny you say that. They don't call me the big stupid for nothing. I actually did a little editing myself, found some bits that I like. So Chalk only has to hit one button here. Chalk, hit it.
Yeah.
So you edited all your favorites into one cut.
That's right. I'm kind of pissed because I didn't put Slung Poo in there, but it's all right.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, dude. Well, let's find out how it goes. Let's get right to it. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Chalk, you ready? Let's do it. UConn v. Alabama. Let me start right there. So far, it has been the UConn Invitational with our dude Dan Hurley and his crew, curb-stomping everybody who has stepped on the court with them. All four wins have been by an average of more than 25 points, and I still can't believe they dropped that 30-0 run on Illinois, a pretty damn good team. Nate,
wrong place, wrong time, Oates. He's done a hell of a job with Bama, getting them to the Final Four for the first time ever, and we know that they can score the ball. We do know that. We also know they are huge dogs in this one. What is the number right now, Head? And I can't wait to find out, what are you doing with this game?
The number is UConn minus 11.5, a huge number because not only are they dominant on the court, they are as well at ATS, like historical dominance here. First team to cover 10 straight ATS games since Villanova did in 85 through 88. And on the court, they've beaten teams by an average of 27.7 points per game this tournament. But anyone can be beaten. It's the NCAA tournament.
Not these guys.
Dan knows that better than anyone.
Not these guys.
His brother, Bobby, they beat UNLV in 91, and this team is not those guys. So I'm going to ride with Bama here and take the point. Yes, sir. How they cover is the three ball, the great equalizer here.
I'm just going to ask you straight up on the air. Dude, are you wearing headphones? Can you hear me through the speakers?
No, I can't actually hear you.
Idiot. No wonder you're not responding to what I'm saying. Idiot.
I'm just blowing right by you. Stop
yeah,
sign
yeah,
on 30.
You are. Exactly. No way. No way. Another technical problem here. It's not Head's fault. All right, go ahead.
Blame Alvin for that one. The three ball. UConn's domination has been ass at the three-point line this tournament. They've shot 28% from distance this tournament, and they haven't faced a team like Bama from outside. Nate Oates' team is not going to beat you with the mid-range, and Kling Kong is under the hoop, so that's not happening there. They're going to shoot threes early and often. They rank second in the country in made threes, fourth in attempts, 21st in percentage, and when they hit 10 or more threes, they are 19-2 on the season. Now, ton of worries for Bama, of course. UConn freshman Stephon Castle, I love him. He's the best prospect in this Final Four. He on Bama guard Mark Sears scares me. Also, Alabama turns the ball over. They can't do that against UConn because the Huskies are the best team in America and going from defense to offense. Also, Bama struggles on the defensive glass, and UConn thrives.
Not as much as you struggle with
second
that segment.
Chance points. Bama's defense is, as we say, backside Poulter, hit it chalk, if you will, please.
Did you grow up, man? That's not funny. What are you laughing at?
I think it's great. I'd imagine Nate Oates packs a paint here too, Jim, and makes the Huskies beat them from outside, but I'm going Bama and taking the points, 11.5.
All right. Not the chalky little bitch that you've been accused of being.
That's right.
Listen, we know Bama. Well, so you can hear me.
Sometimes.
When you want to. Selective. Selective, yeah. That's great. All right, so we know Bama is going to get up and down. We know they're going to jack up a bunch of threes. We know they're going to turn it over. We know they're not afraid to get into a track meet with UConn. Here's what else we know. Bama has not seen anything like UConn in this tournament, especially defensively. If you want to argue that Purdue might actually match up with UConn pretty well in the title game and have more than a puncher's chance to kill the repeat, I will at least listen to that argument. But Bama is not beating UConn. Period. They're not. That's not even a question, Rex Kelly. That's not even a question. The question is, though, will they be competitive? Can they keep from getting blown out? Can they keep it within 11.5 points? I'm going to say no. It's a huge number, but I'm going to ride with my dude Dan Hurley and the Huskies. He said it himself. He is a, quote, obsessed coach. Washington head coach Danny Sprinkle was on this show yesterday. He said it best. Hurley is cutthroat. I will add to both those things. He is the best coach in the college game right now. He is obsessed. He is cutthroat. And his team has taken on his personality. They're relentless on both ends. They're hungry as hell. They want that second one every bit as much as they want the first. And probably even more so. So, normally, I'd be like you, Head. Normally, I wouldn't feel comfortable laying that many points against a good Alabama team, but I will right here. Because Dan Hurley is not about survive in advance. He's about ripping your heart out of your chest, showing it to you, and they're not just looking to win. They're looking to dominate and snatch your soul. I will ride or die with his coach and his dudes, and at the risk of alienating Borquin Mike, who told me earlier in the tournament to, quote, pump the brakes on UConn. I'm going to hammer that pedal to the metal and hammer them at minus 11.5. I will take the legend. I will lay the points. Bama is going to try to run with them, and the Huskies are going to run them out of the gym.
All right.
All right. All right, Purdue v. North Carolina State. So you and I are on opposite ends of that one.
Yep.
Purdue v. North Carolina State in the other semifinal. Purdue finally got the monkey off its back after that colossal tank job against a 16 last year. They finally are who we thought they were, even if they were a little late arriving. But here we are. Here the bleep we are. Then you've got NC State, which has made one of the most unlikely, unbelievable runs in tournament history, which makes sense,
wild.
Right? Right, because when you think of NC State, what's the first thing you generally think of? Jim Valvano shocking the world, winning the Natty, running onto the floor, looking for somebody to hug. To me, they're no fluke, they're no joke. Winning 5 games in 5 days just to get to the tourney was legendary enough, but they weren't just happy to be there, and they won't just be happy to be here. All that said, Head, what is the number? And again, I can't wait to hear, what are you doing with this one?
I think of Tom Gugliotta and Chris Corcione.
Googs and Cor, yes, exactly. Good call, dude. Good call.
Old school Corcione, too. Everyone seems to actually be on NC State here and taking the 9 points. I'm going to go with Purdue and lay the points here. I don't like the matchup for DJ Burns. You know, he has he's going against a giant in Zach Edey and all. Burns isn't going to shoot over him, and what makes Burns so special is his passing out of the post. But with Edey on him, I don't see Purdue sending a lot of help to free up his shooters. That is, if you will, WW, both ends, gas or stat of the week. Chalk, hit it.
It's a matter of time. She's not lonely.
That never lands, dude. That's never funny. That never lands. Nobody likes that except V and the Fee.
I thought our chemistry was pretty good, mine and Chalk's, better than Allen's.
Yeah, because Chalk doesn't hate you.
Yeah, that's true, too. Allen does hate me.
Yeah, I would say if we did this one or two more times, Chalk would be like, hey, Head, I'm not a bleeping jukebox.
I kind of hate Allen after this week, too, so it's kind of fair.
Can you finish your thoughts on this game?
Oh, yeah. Since their second game of the ACC tournament, NC State has been elite at protecting the three ball as well. But while the Wolfpack has three guys to throw at Edey, they are still going to need help. And if they don't help him, he's going to get 40 like he did against Tennessee. And until last game, no team had shot the ball better from three-point distance than Purdue has all season. They shoot 40.6% from downtown against the Vols.
That,
they
man.
Were 3 of 15. That's what NC State needs to stay in this game. Also, the other DJ, DJ Horn, I think he has a big game for NC State. They will ISO him, and he will get buckets. But I'm riding with Purdue and laying the 9 points.
Dude, if they shoot the three ball that well, how the hell are you going to beat them?
You won't.
You won't.
No.
You won't. So, like everybody else, to your point, now I think you made a very interesting point about the Battle of the Bigs. Because, like everybody else, I can't wait to see that Zach Edey, who nobody has any answer for, and Wolfpack big man DJ Burns, who the entire world loves.
Yep.
Having said that, an 11 has never made it to the championship game, and I don't think they will this year either. It's been an incredible run, but it ends tomorrow. Purdue just has too much for NC State and Burns. Too much of everything. Too much size, too much depth, too much experience, too much of a chip on their shoulder, too much of an ability to shoot the ball from beyond the arc. Too much of everything, but do they have enough to cover the 9? It's 9, right? Not 9.5?
9, yes, 9.
All right, 9. I love what NC State's done. You cannot fluke your way to the Final Four. They belong here, and I think they'll stay in the game until they can't. You know, sort of like Illinois hung with UConn before the Huskies came out, and they dropped that hammer on them.
Incredible.
I don't see Purdue dropping a 30-0 run on them, but I do see Edey dominating once again, and I love Purdue's guards. Love the guards. So I try to talk myself into taking the points and the Wolfpack. I damn near did, but I just can't. I'm going to lay that fat 9. And for the record, doing so does not make me or you or anybody else a, quote, chalky little bitch for playing the favorites. If you play them on the money line or you play them straight up, then sure, you're a chalky little bitch. But these are enormous lines to take against two pretty damn good teams in Bama and NC State. Ask me, laying all those points does not make you a bitch. It's actually the opposite.
Now, I'm not going to go all Jeff in San Antonio. And remember, he called himself a, quote, badass.
Oh, yeah.
On this show for, quote, having a kid.
Hard-ass Jeff.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that I'm a badass for laying the points. But can we be very clear about this? Again, laying all those points does not make me or you or anybody else a chalky little B either. It is hard to win ATS. And if I do here, I'm not going to owe anybody an apology. Fact.
Fact.
Do you got anything else interesting, or are you just going to play those two things?
If you want some props, maybe DJ Burns under, I think it's 14.5 points. And then I like Aaron Estrada of Alabama on his over points, too. I can get that real quick.
Get that, please. But thanks for being prepared.
It's moving all the time. 13.5.
No, it's
over
not.
For
you
Aaron
just didn't
Estrada.
Have it in front of you. It's not moving at all.
I had to pull it up.
Give me both those props one more time. In fact, no. Give me the whole thing one more time.
Okay. Bama plus 11.5 v. UConn. Purdue minus 9 v. NC State. Aaron Estrada, Alabama, over 13.5 scoring points. And DJ Burns under. DJ has 14.5, under 14.5 points.
To be perfectly honest, I did not think you could pull it off, Head. Nice job. Very well done. Appreciate
you,
dude.
Thank you, Jim. Hit it again, Chalk, please, one more time.
Today, Chalk. Tomorrow, Chalk. Two of you dudes, I'm telling you. Allen. Look what Allen did. All right, there it is. He did it. Big Head Betts. Big Head in studio, executing pretty well. Chalk. Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak-a-peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or somebody you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA. Cleveland! How you living? Look, you know I love you, C-Town. Always will. Always have. I would even argue that on a national level, very few people have ever had your back over the years like I've had your back, because you've always had my back. I might even go as far as to say that nobody on a national level has had your back like I've had your back. At least until now. Until Caitlin Clark showed up to town for the Final Four. Because damn, does she love her some Cleveland. Check out this reverse Joe Noah from her presser yesterday.
It's been really cool. I think, you know, it was super cool. We went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last night. I think you could stay in there for about a week and still have more things to do. But I've never been to Cleveland before. It's been awesome. Honestly, like, it feels like low-key kind of like just a bigger version of my hometown, like Des Moines, Iowa. It's just obviously a bigger city, and I'm excited to play here. Obviously, with LeBron James being like the face of Cleveland and being able to play here when he first started his NBA career, like, that's just super cool. So I think more than anything, like, you know, we're just excited about the opportunity, and we're happy to be in Cleveland.
I'm not going to lie. I'm not sure that I've ever heard anybody that hyped on Cleveland. Not even me. Like, I love Cleveland. But she really, really loves her some Cleveland. This gal loves Cleveland so much, they're going to start calling her Cleveland Kate. And I know this is where a lot of you haters run up in here and say, yeah, Rome, when you're from Iowa, everything looks amazing. Even Cleveland. When all you know is cornfields and giant empty flat plains, then even Cleveland looks impressive. When you can stand on a beer can and see for thousands of miles of flatland. Even the factories look like the Taj Mahal. Yeah, maybe that makes sense if she had not traveled the entire country and the world playing basketball for her entire life. Or if Iowa
really was just cornfields and giant empty flat plains. Caitlin doesn't love Cleveland because she's never actually seen a real city, obviously. She clearly loves Cleveland for Cleveland. And somebody really should send that clip over to Joe Noah, because we all know exactly how Joe feels about that same place.
I don't know about this place, man. I just stayed in my hotel room, man. Every time I look out my window, it's pretty depressing out here, man. It's bad. It's bad.
So you're not going out?
No. No going out in Cleveland, man. It's all factories.
I mean, here's the thing, C-Town. You know I've got your back, but that right there, that just gets better and better and better and better with age. Nothing is aging like that. I mean, who does that? Who trolls a city right to their face like that? And the manner in which he did and what he said and the way he said it, it's almost the perfect troll.
What's so good about Cleveland?
It's just factories, man. Man, it's just not good. It's not good, man.
It's all factories.
No, I'm not leaving the hotel room, man. No, no, it's just not good. The thing is, as much as I've enjoyed that clip over the years, and I still enjoy that clip, and I love you, Cleveland, I've never been able to agree with that clip. Like, I enjoy the clip because of what he said and how he said it, but I don't agree because my experiences in Cleveland were totally different. I had amazing times in Cleveland. Amazing. Amazing tour stops. Amazing times. When I went, the flats were still incredible. I'm just going with my personal experience. But at the same time, I think it can be both those things. The troll is still hilarious. Let's put it to you this way. I personally believe that Cleveland is a lot closer to Caitlin Clark's version than Joe Noah's version. Although I definitely don't think that I could be entertained. Nah, I don't know. I just wonder how Albany is feeling right about now. You just know Albany saw that Clark clip yesterday and they were like, oh, come on. Kate, really? Really? You couldn't give us any praise when Rebecca Lobo was dragging the hell out of us. You couldn't come out with a glowing endorsement of Albany, even while Albany was under fire on the national stage. Where were you to pick us up? And under fire from somebody who went to school in stores and works in Bristol. Somebody who went to school in stores and works in Bristol was dragging the hell out of us. And you're going to sit there and talk about Cleveland like it's the finest city in the world, but you couldn't say one word about us.
Good luck finding something to do in Albany.
How dare she, man? And Kate, honestly, how dare you? Not only do you not come out and defend our great city of Albany, I'm just pretending to be Albany now. How do you not only defend us? You turn around a few days later and you heap praise on Cleveland and you have nothing to say about us when you're in Albany? You know those local news anchors want a piece of Caitlin too. You just know it.
Yeah, come on, guys.
You know they want a piece of her just like they wanted a piece of Rebecca Lobo. You know the saying goes, if you're bored, you're just a boring person. If you love Cleveland, you're just a lame person. Albany's not done. They so badly want to give somebody the hands again. You know there's an anchor in Albany right now waiting to call Caitlin Small and tell her that complaints from small people about Albany as a site for this tournament were completely unfounded. Just like we know the love shown to Cleveland from certain small people are equally unfounded.
Nice work. The number one thing that we really all learned the last few days of March Madness in Albany is that a few small complaints from small people about Albany as a site for this tournament were completely unfounded. Just as superstars like Clark and Angel Reese shined on the big stage, so too did the city of Albany and the MVP Arena.
Wow. I don't know, Albany. I think what we really learned in the last few days is how thin-skinned you are. And how much you could overreact to something as innocuous as, yeah, good luck finding anything to do in this town. That's really not a reason to go. Yet Albany curb stomped her. Like, got on and started stomping her head like a grape and wouldn't stop. And for what? You know, just kind of some sideways good luck finding anything to do in this town.
Well, also, you know,
like that was some sort of war crime or something.
If you're bored, you're just a boring person, right?
Snap! If you're bored, you're just a boring person. He went there. Oh, snap! Roasted lobes!
If you're bored, you're just a boring person, right?
Rebecca, tell him how his taste. Who knew that Rebecca Lobo was such a crazy lightning rod? What a week. Hey, James, I saved some time for you. Why don't you hit me with the week that was? Go ahead. Hit me with the week that was, James.
Yeah.
A lot of examples in football history of good quarterbacks.
Now, the big...
I apologize. Yeah.
James, I don't remember anything happening this week along those lines, so I'm going to ask you one more time before you leave. Hit me with the week that was.
Yeah.
This guy. Dude, none of that happened this week.
Examples in football history.
None of that happened this week.
Now, the big...
I apologize. Yeah.
There's an airplane leaving every hour from Orange County, James. Be on one of them. Nice job, big head. Clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. No, we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Shriveled, dry, and tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and it's tasty. It's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? But first things first, the king is in the house. We are joined right now by a running back for the Baltimore Ravens. He signed with the Ravens on March 14th. He's played 8 years in the NFL. He, of course, won a Heisman Trophy at Alabama. A four-time Pro Bowler, a two-time All-Pro. He was the 2020 NFL Offensive Player of the Year when he rushed for over 2,000 yards. He is a two-time NFL rushing yardage leader. Last season, he led the league with 280 carries for over 1,100 yards rushing, 12 rushing TDs as well. Of course, I'm talking about Derrick Henry. Derrick, it is so good to have you on the program. What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good, dude. Good. Listen, it seems kind of strange to introduce you as anything other than a Tennessee Titan. So what's it like for you to hear yourself introduced as a Ravens running back? And what were your biggest reasons for signing with Baltimore?
Yeah, it's different, but I like it. Change is always good. We need it sometimes. I'm excited for the opportunity. Ravens is a first-class organization, and blessed for them to be able to give me this opportunity as well. And glad that eventually I got the chance to be a Raven, knowing it was almost close during last season during the trade talks. But yeah, man, just excited for a new beginning. Excited to get to work with my new teammates, and let it all come together as time goes on. So
it's a great attitude right there. Change is good sometimes, and you need that. And you're right, you came close to becoming a Raven last year. Now it's official. Derrick Henry joining us, and then to your point, you get a chance to work with and play with some new teammates. So let me start with the big dog himself. You're joining a team that went to the AFC Championship game last season. You've got the reigning league MVP in Lamar Jackson. What kind of conversations with Lamar have you had, and how pumped are you to get a chance to play alongside him?
Yeah, we haven't had any conversations. He just hit me up on Instagram, and I was just like, just excited to be a part of the culture and the team. But as time goes on, when we all get back in the building, I mean, there'll be plenty conversations had, and us all getting to know one another. I'm just excited to be a part of everything that they've had going on, and hopefully be an add in piece to help them and screen them forward, and really just trying to earn the respect of my teammates once I get in there by the way I work and the way I do things, and that's just my main focus. And I feel like as long as you do everything that you've done since I came in the league, and all the other stuff take care of itself. But definitely excited to play with a player like Lamar Jackson.
The King, Derrick Henry, joining us. You know, the Ravens, you talked about their culture. I've talked to so many Ravens over the years. There very clearly is a Raven way, to be sure. Mm-hmm. And when you think about them, you think about the toughness and the physicality of that team, especially on defense, when you think about guys like Ray Lewis, Terrell Suggs. Do you think, playing the game the way you do with your running style, do you think you can bring some of that mentality to the offense with your physical running style?
I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, fill those shoes of those legends and, the big impact and the special place that they hold in the organization and the fans around the world that are part of Flock Nation. But I hope in some way I can have an impact and do great things while I'm there. And that's the whole goal, is to leave my mark and do something special. And like I said, I'm excited about the opportunity. So I think you got to put the work in to be able to get to that point to have that type of impact.
Talking to Derrick Henry, Derrick, I thought you demonstrated extreme class before you left the field after your final game with the Titans. You took a moment to directly address the crowd in Nashville. I'm curious, what was going through you in that moment, and why was that something that was so important for you to do?
Yeah, it really just happened on the fly, and they gave me the mic, and I just really coming to fruition, like this could be my last time, on this field and in front of those fans and who I've been playing in front of for 8 years. And I just wanted to speak from the heart and tell them how I felt and how much an impact they've had, on my career and the organization as well. And, just tell them how I felt from the heart. And, and I hope that it was something that I left them with that, they can always look back on, and definitely wanted to go out the right way. Didn't go out the way, we wanted to with the season that we had and really the last 2 years. But at the end of the day, it's all a part of the journey. And, hopefully, my main goal is to win a championship. And I hope that in the near future that happens. But, it's definitely wanting to leave them something that they can always look back on. And, I just wanted to speak from the heart and tell them how I felt.
Derrick Henry joining us. Dude, 8 years. I mean, that's quite a run. 8 years with them. In fact, when you think about it, in many ways, you and your head coach there, Mike Vrabel, were the faces of that franchise in Tennessee. Are you surprised that he did not get another head coaching job this winter?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised because I feel like his body of work speaks for itself. I for the last 2 years, wasn't as great as years in the past, but you know, there was so much going on, a lot of injuries, guys getting hurt, you know, it's hard to it's kind of hard to win games when you don't have, you know, your starters playing each and every game. Just a lot of guys just getting banged up a lot, and but I felt like he still did a great job and showed that he can lead a team and lead men and inspire, and had a great coaching staff, and I just felt like, you know, opportunity would present itself at some point for him. You know, it didn't this year, but I'm sure in the near future he'll get another opportunity for sure.
Talking to Derrick Henry. So, Derrick, before you go, it's pretty clear to me that you're in a really good spot. You're in a good spot. You're anxious to get going and put the work in, get in that facility, get with your new teammates. But the fact is, you had options. You had options as a free agent. And, of course, since you have that home in Dallas, naturally it seemed like, well, the Cowboys would be a tremendous fit because Tony Pollard is now gone. I mean, for the record, and you've touched on this, but just so we're all clear on this, did Jerry Jones, we know he said he was going all in. For the record, did they ever even reach out to you?
No, they never reached out. And then for the record, you know, Baltimore was always my number one option. That's always where I wanted to go. And like I said, I know the trade talks, it was almost going to happen. But I didn't know once free agency started if, you know, they still felt the same way until I talked to my agent to see, you know, what was really going on. And I know, like you said, the Cowboys lost Pollard. So, you know, I didn't know if they're going to be looking for a running back. You know, I live in the offseason. I've been training here, living here for a while. So I just thought it made sense. And, you know, I thought there'd be talks, but they never really reached out. And, you know, like I said, everything happened for a reason. You know, I just, you know, pray to God that, you know, put me in the place where I'm meant to be. And Baltimore is that spot. And I'm happy, and I'm excited for the opportunity. But the Cowboys never reached out, and it's all good at the end of the day. No hard feelings.
Hey, Derek, one last thought. So for the record, as long as we're setting the record straight, why was Baltimore your top choice over Dallas? Why was that a better situation for you than Dallas?
I just feel like it fit my their culture, what they're all about. I feel like it fits my style of play. And, you know, I don't know. I just felt like it was going to be destined at some point. Like I said, we came close during last season. And, you know, as I started thinking about it, as the season went on and then going to the off season, you know, I just felt like it just made sense. You know, you feel like you got a feeling, you know, about something. And, you know, it just felt like it's meant to be. And that's what I felt, and that's how I felt about Baltimore.
Hey, Derek, let me ask you one last thing. I appreciate your time so much, man. Great to get caught up with you. You mentioned a world championship. Obviously, you're going to end up one day. You've already had an amazing career. You've got plenty of ball left. You're going to end up with one of those big old yellow jackets one day. But in terms of the ring itself, how do you kind of define what that means to you? Like, there's so many things out of your control. Is it going to be okay if you don't get one? Or when your feet hit the ground every single morning, is that one of the first things you think of? Like, how important is that championship to you? What's it mean to you?
Man, it means a lot. I pray for it every day. I literally do. I really want to win one. I want to experience that feeling. And there's nothing like, you know, accomplishing something that, you know, you do as a group, as a team, as a brotherhood, as a family, that you went to work every day with the men beside you and the women, and to all accomplish one goal, and to put all that work in for so long, and to finally reach that moment, it's like no other feeling. And I'm just tired of it getting to that point around that time where I'm sitting watching on TV rather than playing in it. It's getting old now, so I definitely want to win one and have that feeling. Is definitely important to me. And if I don't, I'll be really sad. And you know, hopefully I can continue to play until until I get one. But yeah, it's really important to me. It's something that I really want to accomplish for sure.
My man, much respect for that response. Listen, one last thought because you brought this up. You strike me as one of the most selfless superstars that there is. And I think it's really curious because you're a guy that all eyes are always on. You're a person that everybody is always counting on and looking to be that alpha, yet you're so selfless and you're all about the team. I'm curious, where does it come from? Is that family? Is it upbringing? Is it the way you've always been? Was that partly from college? Why are you the way you are in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I need to be that, you know, that person that needs to light a spark, I'll be that, though. But definitely my upbringing. You know, I've been blessed with so much and so fortunate to be able to live my dream and do things that I've done throughout my career, you know, that I've dreamed as a kid that I never take it for granted. Very grateful for everyone that's been a part of my journey that helped me get this far. And the ones that are helping me now, that keep me going. And I just know that it can be here one day and be gone the next. So just want to let God know and everybody out there know, even kids, that, you know, just be grateful for everything that you have. Life is not promised. So we got to make sure, you know, we give thanks to the ones who make our life special. And work hard and live it up while we're here, and don't take every day for granted, and give God thanks and with everything that you have and everything that you accomplish.
Preach, big dude. Exactly. Man, that is such a great message and such great perspective and a great mindset behind it, too. Derrick Henry, new member of the Baltimore Ravens. Derrick, I appreciate you, and I appreciate you making time and finding value and coming on this program. I know without even checking, the listeners love that. It's great to have you back, my man. Thanks so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate you having me.
Yes, sir. Derrick Henry, the king. That's another great conversation. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced? A brake light fix, or a quick service, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts are extremely knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, they are friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. Once again, O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome.